It's great to see everybody here again today. What a blessing it is to be among God's people on this fine Lord's Day. We are a blessed congregation. There are many good things that happen here. A lot of exciting things going on. There's a lot of growth in number and in spirit. Our faith is growing. Our knowledge is growing. The body of those who are our leaders in this congregation, our shepherds, is soon to be growing as well. These are all very good signs in a congregation. So I encourage you, as you have already been encouraged previously, to participate in the process of appointing elders. Continue to contribute names to those who've been tasked with collecting those names and sifting through them and interviewing individuals. Continue to provide input to our current elders. This is all very important. This whole process is so important. I've pointed out to some of you in the past that in your lifetime of being a Christian, you might get to go through this process a half a dozen times or less. So it really is a special time to be able to throw in your contribution to appointing new elders or additional elders in a congregation. It's a really great opportunity that we have. There's an old saying, and I'm sure that you're familiar with it, that familiarity breeds contempt. Now, the point of the saying is that when you become more familiar with things that you once maybe idolized or put on a pedestal, and then you start to see them for what they really are, it breeds contempt in your heart for those things. The thing you used to have on a pedestal suddenly isn't worth it anymore. Rebecca told me when she went to Paris, France, a number of years ago in college, she and her sister spent some time there in Paris. She did go to see the Mona Lisa, that world-renowned painting from Leonardo da Vinci. She said the queue for it was really long. She said you wait in line for a long time to go see the Mona Lisa because it's probably the most famous painting in the world, if maybe top three, top 10 most famous paintings in the world. But she said after all that waiting in line, you get up to it and it is a whole lot smaller than you thought it was. I don't know if anybody else here has gone to see the Mona Lisa, but the impression that I tend to have, as most people do, is that it's a rather large painting, that it must be a glorious painting for how famous it is. But she said you get up to it, it's only about 2 feet by maybe 1.5 feet, that it's a rather small painting. Now, I never saw the Mona Lisa, and I haven't met very many celebrities, but I did meet Weird Al Yankovic one time, and he had the flu, so familiarity breeds contempt, I suppose. He wasn't as funny as I thought he would be, but I don't think anybody's as funny when they have the flu. Now, I think in a lot of ways, familiarity does breed contempt, and that's true in a lot of areas of life. But when it comes to our elders, leadership in a local congregation, I will disagree with that old saying. And I'll replace it with this one, that familiarity with good leadership actually breeds contentment in a congregation, not contempt. Now, we have to be careful that we don't put our elders up on such a pedestal that it would create a situation where familiarity breeds contempt. They are human beings. They have their own faults and failures. They have things they're working through. They have areas of improvement in their own lives as well. They're not any more special than we are. They don't have a special place in our congregation, except in the sense that they serve in a very unique way. They're servants. They're shepherds. They're elders. So I want to talk about this idea of familiarity with good leadership, and let's start in John chapter 10. Here Jesus describes himself as the good shepherd, and while John chapter 10 isn't a passage specifically about shepherds in a local congregation, I would say that if you want to be a good shepherd of a congregation of Christians, then you need to look to your example of the greatest shepherd of all. If you can be like the good shepherd of John 10, you'll be a good shepherd at Monte Vista. So in John chapter 10, notice verses 1 through 5, and then we'll skip down a little bit later on. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber, but he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, And he calls his own sheep by name and he leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes before them. And the sheep follow him because they know his voice. And a stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him, because they don't know the voice of strangers. Skip on down to verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hireling and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, beholds the wolf coming, and he leaves the sheep, and he flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hireling. He's not really concerned about the sheep. But verse 14, I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. That is what it means to be a good shepherd. And familiarity runs as a theme throughout these verses. Jesus' relationship to his flock spiritually is never seen as an impersonal thing or merely professional. The fact that he is our Savior is not the same thing as the fact that your doctor is your doctor, or your plumber is your plumber, or Weird Al Yankovic is a very funny and popular musician. It's not the same relationship that you share with anything else. He's our shepherd. My sheep know me, and I know them. My sheep hear my voice. They know my voice. They're familiar with my voice. And I know every single one of them as well. And I can call them out by name. That familiarity is what makes the difference between the good shepherd and a hireling. A hireling has no personal or emotional investment in the flock. He doesn't really care about the flock. So when danger comes or the weather gets bad, he leaves because it's suddenly inconvenient to be around that flock of sheep. It's familiarity, my friends. And the familiarity runs very deep with Jesus also. When we read in passages like Hebrews chapter 2, beginning in verse 9 and running through the end of the chapter, it describes the way that Jesus was made to be like his brethren in all things so that he could experience everything as we experienced. Colossians 2 says that deity came in the form of a body. God came in the form of a man. God came in the form of Jesus Christ so that he could experience humanity as we experience it. The same way that we get hungry, Jesus was hungry. When we stub our toe on a rock, Jesus stubbed his toe on a rock. I'm sure at some point in his life, Jesus got stung by a bee or bit by a mosquito or got the flu or got a headache or was abandoned by his friends or mocked by people who had no idea what they were talking about. When you experience pain, you can rest assured that your shepherd experienced the pain right along with you, and he knows what it was like. Philippians chapter 2 also makes the same point, that he humbled himself, even though he was equal with God, he humbled himself and did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped or held on to. What Paul means by that, in the same way that you might grasp onto a life preserver in a flood, Jesus did not consider equality with God a thing to be held on to desperately, but he laid it aside and said, for now, I need to become a man. For now, I need to be a human, to experience life as a human. While still being deity spiritually, he was physically a flesh and blood human being. He experienced it as we experience life as well. Along those same lines, the good shepherd always endures the same conditions as the sheep. Or as Mitch has put it in the past, a shepherd has to smell like sheep. A shepherd has to be around sheep, experiencing life with them. Where the sheep need to go, the shepherd has to lead them first and foremost. And when it's cold outside and the sheep are cold, the shepherd is cold as well. And the shepherd puts the sheep's needs ahead of his own. When they're hungry, he endures hunger and deprivation to lead them to pasture. When the sheep are thirsty, he endures thirst himself to lead them to quiet waters. He experiences weather with them. He experiences danger as well. The wolf may just well target the shepherd instead of the sheep, if that wolf is crazy enough, at least. Our elders are going to experience the same things that we do. They have to experience both life and life in the congregation the way that we experience it as well. And when we get frustrated with things, they get frustrated. When we lose our patience, they may lose their patience as well. But also our joys and our victories and our triumphs, they share in those things too. The shepherd knows his sheep well enough that he endures all things with them as they experience them. Most of all, they know each other, just as you can see from verse 14 of our text in John 10. I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. And I like the fact that it's a two-way relationship as well. That it's not just that I know my sheep or that my sheep just know me, is that we know each other. Familiarity. Familiarity that goes both ways. But now go to Luke chapter 15 and notice the sheep-shepherd relationship in Luke chapter 15. The willingness that the shepherd has to go the distance for one lost sheep. And then we'll make an application and move on. Luke chapter 15, beginning in verse 3. So he told them a parable saying, what man among you, and I always like the way that Jesus starts a parable like that, as if what he's about to explain should be common knowledge, that it's perfectly reasonable what he's about to say. What man among you, right? What man among you? What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was lost. A few points to bring out here on the line of familiarity. First of all, he knows he has 100 sheep. He knows he has 100 sheep. He doesn't just round up or round down or say, I have about 100 sheep, or, give or take 100 sheep or so. He knows I have exactly 100 sheep. If he didn't believe he had exactly 100 sheep, then it really wouldn't matter if one or two were missing, right? Because if he made a count and said, well, I've got 99, he could might as well just say, well, I can count 99 right now, but I've always had, you know, around 100 sheep. No, he knows he has exactly 100 sheep, and those 100 sheep are his sheep. Look at what he says again here. Rejoice with me, for I have found not a sheep that was lost, somebody else's sheep that was lost. I found my sheep. That was my sheep from my flock. And I left the 99 in a safe place. I knew that they'd be safe there. And I went to go find my lost sheep. So here's a practical application that I think is really important for us to consider here. When you combine the sentiments from John 10 and this parable from Luke chapter 15, I think you get an idea about church membership. You're wondering, well, that's kind of out of left field, isn't it? But think about this. At times, and I think it's becoming a more popular notion today, among Christians, but at times we have this mentality that I don't really need to be a member of a local congregation. I'm just a Christian at large, and I can kind of go from church to church, and I can just sort of float around from a church to church to church wherever I feel like being that Sunday, whatever's kind of fitting the need of the moment for me. And yet when you look at John 10 and you look at Luke 15, it becomes clear that in a flock of sheep, that shepherd knows who his sheep are. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. I know who they are. And if I have 100 sheep, it is because I've taken a head count of 100 sheep. And those are my exact 100 sheep. Again, the exact nature of the fact that Jesus goes out of his way to say he leaves 99, exactly 99 over in the pasture, to go find one that's lost. We work best when we work within a congregation. Sheep survive longest when they are surviving and thriving within the context of a flock, when they have other sheep and a shepherd to watch over them. Sheep that wander around from flock to flock to flock do not thrive and often do not survive for very long. So what's implied from John 10 and the parable in Luke 15 is that you need to be a member of a local congregation. And you need to submit to the authority of an eldership at that local congregation. and serve in that capacity and allow them to know who you are and to also know who they are as well. But let's move on to a different point. Let's talk about familiarity in an elder's qualifications. Now, these are passages that we're very familiar with, but let's go to 1 Timothy, and then we'll look at Titus chapter 1 also. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, notice the way that familiarity runs as a theme through the qualifications. That of all the things God could have asked an elder to be, so many of them have to do with knowing that person and building relationships and familiarity with that person's life and his reputation. So notice here, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. It is trustworthy statement. It is a trustworthy statement, excuse me. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach in the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, and able to teach, or apt to teach, as other translations will put it. Now, I look at all those things, these character qualities, these qualifications, if you want to call them that. How can you know any of these things are true if you don't know the man who's being considered as an elder or an overseer in a congregation? If you don't know somebody, how do you know that he's above reproach? If you don't know somebody, how do you know that he's temperate? Temperance is something that you only find out from a person when you really get to know who they truly are on the inside. And the same is true of being prudent or respectable. After all, respectability is not a self-derived quality, is it? I'm not a respectable person because I think I'm respectable. I can only be respectable if you think I'm respectable. Respectability is derived from other people. So an elder is only respectable if other people think he's respectable. And you have to know somebody if they're respectable. You have to know somebody. But verse 3, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle. You know, you only know somebody's gentleness when you get to know them. Some people who seem gentle on the outside prove to not be gentle, and some people who can seem a little rough along the edges actually become incredibly gentle people the more you find out about them, the deeper you dig beyond the exterior. Free from the love of money, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. Yeah. Now, maybe you can get some superficial sense of that from the outside, but I don't think you really know how a man manages his household until you've seen him interact with his household. And that's why the hospitality is so important back in verse 2. Hospitable. You can't know how a man's marriage is until you've been there in his home and seen how he interacts with his spouse. You can't know his relationship to his kids until you've been in his home, till you've been outside the context of the church building in a worship service and kind of the formality of this, until you've been outside the context of this and seen him in real life, how do you know what his relationship to his wife and kids are? There has to be familiarity in order to know any of these things. But let's go on to Titus chapter 1 and notice Paul's list here that he gives to Titus in Titus chapter 1 and verse 5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you might set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. Namely, if any man be above reproach. Now again, like respectability, above reproach is only in the eye of the beholder. I might feel like I'm above reproach, but that doesn't mean anything. I am only above reproach if I am above your reproach. Mitch and Dale are only above reproach if they are above our reproach. That quality is not a self-derived quality, but only comes from other people. In verse 6, namely, if any man be above reproach, the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of dissipation or rebellion, for the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward or servant or minister, not self-willed, not quick-tempered. And again, a man might be able to cover that fault up on the outside, but you start digging a little bit deeper and peel the layers back, that's when you find out if a man is quick-tempered or not. Not addicted to wine, not pugnacious, not fond of sordid gain, but hospitable. There's that hospitality again, right? Hospitality itself just begs for familiarity. loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, that he may be able to both exhort in sound doctrine and refute those who contradict. Familiarity. I mean, that's the name of the game today. How many times are we going to say the word familiarity before it doesn't sound like a real word anymore, right? But that's the name of the game. You've got to be more familiar with your elders than you are with your boss at work. More familiar with your elders than fellow students in a classroom. More familiar with your elders than a district judge. More familiar with your elders than a state senator or a governor or President Trump. And there's got to be a degree of familiarity that exceeds all of those human relationships. All of those human relationships. And it's that degree of familiarity that builds love, and it builds trust, and it also builds credibility with an eldership. Credibility. Now, moving on to our next point here. We see that there are a lot of dangers that exist in the world. If you keep on reading here, well, how did that happen? If you keep on reading in Titus, one of the things that he brings out in Titus chapter 1 is the dangers that exist. That the reason why your elder has to be able to teach and refute with sound doctrine and to know the word is because there are threats that exist out there. There are threats that exist out there. You go back to a number of passages in Acts chapter 20, for example. In Acts 20, verses 28 through 30, Paul is talking to the Ephesian Christians, and he warns them that one of the reasons that you have to stay so alert, one of the reasons that you have to stay on your toes and work so hard as an elder, a shepherd of that flock, is because there are wolves out there. There are wolves out there, and every now and then there are wolves in here too. Be on guard, he says. Be on guard for the safety of the flock. There's dangers from lions in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. There's a prowling lion going about in our lives, in the lives of people of the world, and that lion is Satan. There's the danger of sheep getting lost, just like we saw from the parable of the lost sheep. There's the danger of thieves, just like we saw in John 10 verse 1. There's the danger of inept leadership in John 10, verses 12 through 13. The hireling, right? The hireling doesn't care. And notice the connection there. Where Jesus says in John 10 that the hireling, right? What's a hireling? What do we think of with a hireling normally? A young man, right? Hireling is typically like maybe a shepherd in training or a young man or someone that you just kind of bought off Craigslist or something for the day. But we think of the hireling as kind of a novice or a newbie or an experienced young person. And then look at the qualification of the elders of, he can't be a new convert. He has to be an elder, by definition, an older man, so that he's experienced, so that he's not the hireling who abandons his post. But there's dangers of malnourishment also in 1 Peter 5 and verse 2. The King James Version uses the word, feed the flock of God which is among you. Feed the flock. So part of an elder's job is to make sure that we don't starve to death, spiritually speaking. So my friends, the threats are real. The threats are very real out there. So we need to be careful not to bristle or complain at the notion of our elders holding us accountable. I think sometimes we have that idea of like independent, freedom-loving Americans. I don't like people telling me what to do. I don't do the whole authority thing, I think is the attitude of some people. You've got to accept the authority of elders because there's danger out there and they've got your best interests in mind. Don't bristle at that thought. Don't bristle at the idea of criticism that they offer. Don't complain about the idea of them setting boundaries or showing restraint with new ideas and projects. I've said it before from the pulpit, so you know it's true, right? That I'm allowed, we have this joke, right, when I meet with the elders about ideas I have. I'm allowed to have one crazy idea every month. And they're only obligated to listen to one every 6 months or something, right? I'm always throwing stuff out there just seeing what sticks with them, right? But I have to be careful not to get discouraged that I might have 12 new ideas that I throw out there, and maybe only one idea out of 12 is something that they think is actually worth our time trying. Well, that's an elder's job. It's an elder's job to show restraint Right? There's only so much money in the budget. There's only so much time and only so much energy. Let's focus on the things we can actually get done and the jobs that need to be done first and foremost. And it's an elder's job to set boundaries and show restraint. It's an elder's job to take that staff every now and then and goad the sheep back into the flock. You're wandering a bit too far that direction. You know, there's a ravine over there about 20 feet away. Let's not get too close to that ravine, shall we? In Psalm 23, the great, great psalm on the relationship to our shepherd, who is God, says, I'm able to go to quiet places and peaceful places and lie down in green pastures, not because I know I can defend myself, but because you're with me. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he goes on to say, even when I'm going through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm not afraid of anything. Because you're with me there too. And your rod and your staff, yes, they're weapons. They are weapons. But your rod and your staff, even though they're weapons, they are a comfort to me because I know that that rod and that staff, when I get out of line, will be used to bring me back in line. And that rod and that staff will be used to keep the enemies out and keep the wolves and the lions at bay. So I'm able to lie down in green pastures because I know I have somebody who's in authority over me, who cares about me and who loves me, who protects me, even if that involves restraint and limitation at times. A couple of practical applications as we bring our lesson to a close then. Do we really know each other? I mean, how well do you really know each other? If it is to be a two-way relationship, then are we really making that possible with our elders? Or do we keep them at arm's length because they are our elders? And for the men here who will be appointed elders at some point in the next couple of months, is our relationship with them going to change in such a way that maybe the friendship isn't what it used to be? Somebody that maybe you used to be really comfortable around, when they become an elder, are you going to keep them at arm's length? Maybe an elder that you haven't known as well, or an elder that you haven't been as close to in the past. And that's true. We all have people that we're a little closer to. We have people that we identify with more, people that we think are funnier than others. And that's okay. It's all right to have personalities. But maybe that elder that you weren't as close to before, why don't you take a step out of your comfort zone and take the step to get to know them a little bit more? And to our elders and to potential elders here as well, whether you're appointed this year or you're a little bit younger and you'll be appointed 10 years from now, it doesn't matter, but to elders and potential future elders, make yourself available as well. Let other people see the human side of you. Yeah, you're a shepherd, and that's a big responsibility. But you can be bothered to spend some time getting to know people on a personal level as well. But the second point is this: an elder's imperfections, which are there, only mean that he is human. Rather than familiarity breeding contempt for that person, I think the imperfections of our elders should foster a sense of relatability to our elders, and also an appreciation for how hard the job is. So maybe they don't get it right 100% of the time. Maybe they miss a call every now and then. Maybe they do lose their patience sometimes with me or with you or with anybody. That just shows how hard the job is. And I know I couldn't do it as well. At least at this point in my life, at my level of maturity, I know I couldn't do it as well as they've done it. Third, how an elder handles failure is as important as how he handles success. We only know this through familiarity and relationship with them. To find out that an elder in his younger years lived a prodigal existence or sowed his wild oats or something, that shouldn't leave you less respectful of an elder, but more respectful of the fact that they were able to work through that period in their lives and become the man that they are now. That's important. And fourth, familiarity should be updated on a regular basis. You might have known someone really, really well a few years ago, and you might kind of keep them in your pocket like, well, you know, I've got the friendship all logged away, right? He's a fairly secure friend. I don't have to worry about him too much. I'm going to go meet new people and mingle with new people and get to know new people. Well, you know what? Even as we meet new people in a growing congregation, let's make sure that we go back to our old friends and keep the friendship fresh. Just because you add new friendships with new people at Monte Vista doesn't mean you can't go back to the friends you've had for years and just say, you know, we haven't talked in a while. It's been a few years. I've been busy with some other things, some other projects. Let's go back. Let's rekindle this friendship of ours. The same is true with our elders. Our elders need to make sure that as we add new members and they're kind of bringing them into the flock and getting to know them, don't forget to talk to those long-time members, the 20, 30, 40-year veterans of the work at Monte Vista, and go back and see, how have your needs changed since the last time we talked? How have your skills changed since the last time we talked? That little sheet that you filled out when you placed membership at Monte Vista, maybe that was 10 years ago, and since that time, you've honed a skill, or you've grown a desire to expand yourself, and the skills and the challenges, maybe you want to do something different. That little sheet from 10 years ago that lists what you're willing to do at Monte Vista, that's going to change over time. But the negative can be true as well. That we might log friendships away and say, he's doing okay, great marriage, great kids, everything's fine there. But a few years later, you find out that their marriage wasn't so great. That their needs are changing. And as we get older, we have more health problems, perhaps financial difficulties, frustrations, doubts. So our elders need to update their friendships with us regularly, and we need to be open enough with them that we're willing to share changes that have happened in our lives. We'll bring our lesson to a close here. If you're not a Christian here this morning, then I highly encourage you to listen to a very simple passage in Mark 16:16. I know I go to it all the time, and we mention it frequently, but it's because it is the gospel in short. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved, but he who does not believe shall be condemned. It cannot be put more simply than that. So if you have any spiritual needs this morning, I encourage you to let them be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.